So are all the claims in Governor Scott Walker's new book, Unintimidated, true? PolitiFact Wisconsin checked out some of them, and we will share the results with you during this first half of our State Capitol Report. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Monday, November 25th. What's true? What's false? And how's the governor doing on some of his campaign promises as well? We will welcome your input, your reactions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page, or you can tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Now, PolitiFact Wisconsin has not researched every line of the book or every claim in the book, but our guest will share with us as many of the claims that it did check out. Our guest is Greg Borowski, Assistant Managing Editor for Projects and Investigations at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and Editor of PolitiFact Wisconsin. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks very much for being with us. Well, there's a number of them here. Let's just start with Act 10 and property taxes. Now, did you read his book and then check these out, or were these how did you do this?
Well, what we did was we got an advanced copy of his book, as you know, reviewers and others can do. And our PolitiFact team divided it up and read the entire book and kept notes on things that looked like claims we should check, or really in many cases things we had already checked, or you know, statements that were pretty close to what we had reviewed already. And then we gathered those up. We're working our way through the list because there's a really high interest in the book and in Governor Walker right now. And we did a roundup story about a week ago on many claims we've seen before and a few new ones in there, and we're still looking for other ones. So if your listeners have suggestions, they should email them to us at politifact@journalsentinel.com.
Good. And the Act 10 and property taxes. Here's a claim, and I believe you might have checked this one out. Previously, in July of 2011, without our reforms, property taxes would have risen by an average of $700 over the course of the biennium for the average taxpayer. And that you rated as false. Why?
Right. When we reviewed that in July of 2011, we dug into the numbers and found that it really was a hypothetical situation the governor was describing when he was describing it to those who heard that message as an actual amount of money coming that would be in their wallet thanks to the tax changes. So we rated that portion of the claim false.
But the portion of the claim that you rated true, instead, thanks to Act 10, they declined on a medium valued home.
Right. I don't think there's a lot of dispute on that one. The taxes, according to the Fiscal Bureau and others, have gone down, not by a lot, and of course not for everybody, because it depends on what's happened to the assessed value of your individual property and other circumstances, but they did go down slightly, and that part we felt was accurate.
Mm-hmm. There was a pants on fire, I notice here. Taxpayers could save $680 on property taxes over the next 4 years.
Yeah, this was one where it sounds awful similar to the earlier claim, but it's really not. And this was one that wasn't in the book. It was made just a few weeks ago. But in an email that the governor sent to supporters and others, he used that figure. And when we dug into it, it just didn't hold up by any stretch of the imagination, again, because it was presented as, here's how much you, Mr. and Mrs. Taxpayer, are going to save from my changes. And what he actually did was he went back and he took a very hypothetical situation to say, okay, if Governor Jim Doyle had won another term, and if all of the tax patterns and trends continued exactly as they were for the next 4 years, here's what it would be like compared to that. But of course, that didn't happen. And when you work through the numbers, even if you grant some of the hypotheticals, he was wrong, but because he presented it as a factual thing, we thought it was a ridiculous statement, and that's why we rated it Pants on Fire.
Yeah, maybe we should review that a little bit. We've done shows with you so often, sometimes I forget not everybody knows all of the different ratings. What does it mean if someone's pants are on fire?
For us, that means that the claim isn't just false, but it's false and ridiculous. So it's usually something that's just so over the top that it warrants something more than a false, which might just be an innocent mistake, or you misspoke something that was wrong. Pants on Fire usually is a much more egregious kind of thing. And in this case, we felt, you're presenting this thing to the people who get the email as they're going to get this, $680 over 4 years is not a small amount of money for folks, and they're really getting, much smaller if their home happens to be the one on the correct side or the right side of the decline.
Yeah. Well, did you add them all up? Did Governor Walker get mostly trues, mostly falses, or mostly pants on fire from the claims from the book that you checked out?
Well, we didn't add them all up, but my sense when I was editing the item that our reporters did is the ones they found were more generally on the true side, and that could well be the fact that, if you're writing a book, you have many more opportunities than even sending out a daily news release or us off-the-cuff remarks in a interview setting to, go back and fact-check them and change them. There was one example we found where we had initially rated it as a half-truth. This was where he was talking about in March of 2012 about out-of-state protesters in the wake of Act 10 and amid the recall that they were targeting his two sons on Facebook. And at the time, we rated that half-true because it wasn't multiple protesters. It was, one from Wisconsin had posted a couple messages. And the way the governor wrote it was, quote, one of the protesters even targeted Matt and Alex on Facebook. So we didn't go back and re-rate that, but he clearly had changed the language based on what, was a little more factual based than what had been presented when it first came up in the course of the daily politics at the Capitol.
Ah, so just so I understand that correctly, because he specifically said one of them targeted his son on Facebook.
And the initial statement was much, much broader that, all of these out-of-state protesters were doing this, and it really wasn't, as near as we could tell at the time, that broad. And so at the time we rated it half true, and in the book it came out with a much narrower, more precise statement. So I think in a case like this, you would expect that things have been vetted a little more thoroughly than, something that a statement made off the cuff or in sort of the course of daily politics.
Yeah, you might also think that there should not be any pants on fires if
you might
there's time to clarify or to be more precise, so you're not making what your PolitiFact is considering a ridiculously false statement. Were there any other pants on fires?
Well, there was one in the book that we referenced, and we touched on it in parts. The claim in the book that we referenced in our article was we were broke and just could not afford a Milwaukee to Madison train, and again, we didn't rate this specific one as stated in the book, but we've touched on it before. Twice we rated the claim that the state was broke, and first we rated it false, because it was stated as we're broke, we don't have any more money, but employees were being paid, bills were being paid, services were being performed, revenue was coming in, there are all sorts of tools from cuts and layoffs, the taxes that you could do to make ends meet, so we felt like to say we're broke was just an incorrect statement. And then 7 months later, there was a similar claim that not only was Wisconsin broke, but it was, $3 billion in debt. And that one we rated pants on fire because what they were citing as a debt, and this was made in a fundraising letter sent out to supporters, what they were claiming as debt was the $3.6 billion budget shortfall. which, you know, wasn't dead. It's a totally different measure that looks at how, you know, if spending continues and same programs are in place and if departments seek new increases, here's what sort of the gap or the challenge the governor and legislature faced. So that was one that we had rated pants on fire in that context. So from what we looked at so far, I think that was that statement about we're broke was probably the closest thing, you know, to a false or pants on fire that we came across in the book.
We are talking with Greg Borowski. He is the editor of PolitiFact Wisconsin, and PolitiFact Wisconsin has researched some of the claims made in Governor Scott Walker's new book, Unintimidated, and we are going over some of those during this first half of our State Capitol Report. And we wonder if there's a claim in the governor's book that has you scratching your head. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is our State Capitol Report. In this half, we are fact-checking Governor Walker's new book, Unintimidated. We'll also touch on, get an update on how the governor is doing on his campaign promises from 2010. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. By the way, coming up after 7:30, we will talk about the Affordable Care Act and Wisconsin and a new report that is out. That's coming up after 7:30. Right now we are talking with the editor for PolitiFact Wisconsin, Greg Borowski. And we're having a number of callers who are questioning various claims, but they're not ones you specifically checked out, as far as I know, Greg. So how did you decide which ones you'd check out and which ones you didn't?
Well, again, we read through the galleys of the book. This is how it appears, you know, before publication, and we tried to identify ones that we had looked at before so we could give readers a quick heads up on those, because, as you know, politicians often say the same thing or variations on the theme, and that was to be expected. And then we found, I believe we've done three already from the book that are fresh, and we've got a few more on our list that we're trying to sort out. In some cases, it's trickier than others to track them down, but we're working on it as best and as quickly as we can.
Yeah. For instance, one of our Facebook listeners is curious about what he says in the book about why he left college, why he left Marquette University before completing his degree. I think in the book he says he left for family reasons, and in other interviews we hear he left for a job. Or, you know, are you looking into that one?
That's one we're trying to get our head around. It's a difficult one because, and I say this because as investigative editor here, we've tried to report out a lot of these things, and I know a lot of people have questions about that period in time, and it's, you know, as we've tried to get to the bottom of something that happened, you know, 25 plus or 25 some years ago, it's difficult to get recollections and records and something that can establish it. But that is an area that we would be considering an item on to say, you know, how was it explained before and how is it explained now? You know, whether we can get to the bottom of what actually was in Scott Walker's head at that point. I mean, that's a much different task you would be seeking out to do.
Yeah. Brian from Superior heard the book does not mention the promise of 250,000 jobs. Is this true?
I believe that's true. I've heard several news outlets say that, and I recall one of my reporters saying that. And, you know, people can draw their own conclusions, I'm sure, on why that wasn't in there. I suppose the governor would say that, you know, this book was about that, you know, focused on that period of Act 10 and lessons learned and so forth, and that it didn't take a more expansive look. You know, sometimes these political memoirs or these books that politicians, right, to sort of frame where they're coming from, take a much broader view. But my understanding, and I haven't read it entirely yet, but that this one is a much, you know, more focused.
But the PolitiFact has, while the book may not have brought up that particular promise,
you've written that one over and over.
So what's the latest on that?
Well, I mean, that's one to keep in mind. On the promise meter, we have a different set of ratings than true, half true, and so forth. And there we look at promises as kept, broken, in the works, stalled, compromise, and assign one of those ratings. And we just looked again at the governor's 250,000 new jobs promise, and we continue to rate that in the works because there is, you know, progress being made, albeit, and we always note this, he's far off the pace that he would need. Our item that ran just the other day said he would need, I believe it's roughly 11,000 jobs a month before the end of the year of 2014 to reach 250,000. That's, you know, not something we've hit on any regular basis over the last year, so it certainly looks doubtful that he'll reach it. I think he's acknowledged it's doubtful he may reach it, but we've kept it at in the works as long as it's still showing positive improvement.
The only broken promise I see on this list in front of me, anyway, there might be another one, his promise to sign a repeal of Wisconsin's indoor smoking ban. He did that. He said he would sign a repeal.
He had during the course of the campaign he said he would sign a repeal of the state's smoking ban. He later came around and said that he was in favor of the indoor smoking ban. So that was one that we rated as a promise broken. Now, granted, it's one that a lot of people may be happy he broke the promise, but our idea on the walk-a-meter is just to score what he said he was going to do and what he did do. And we have others. I'm just looking at the list here. I think it's about nine or so. So there are 65 promises we're monitoring, and you know some are still in the works or stalled, and you know could change before this, you know, before next year when the election occurs. But on the promise broken side, we had nine so far, including one which was a key one for him. He said he would oppose and veto all tax increases, but we found in the first budget he allowed some increases on the earned income tax credit, which the Legislative Fiscal Bureau has always scored as a tax increase. So we rated that as a promise broken, and a few others, such as that he said he would strip all policy items and pork projects from the state budget. And we found that there were some good examples in there, that he would never raid special state funds for other programs, but we found some cases where he did. So it's a real mixed bag on the promise side of things. In general, he's got more kept than anything else. 55% of the ones he started with we have rated as kept, and nine is broken, nine is compromise, and you know just down to, I think there's 11 or so in one of these in the works or stalled categories that can still change.
Back to the claims in the book, is there, we only have another couple of minutes, is there another significant claim that you think is worth talking about in our last couple of minutes?
Yeah, I mean, I think the one that people have talked about quite a bit in recent times is this turning this $3.6 billion deficit into a $500 million surplus. And that's a new one that we rated because we hadn't heard it expressed in that manner before. And we rated it half true a few weeks ago. And the reason for that was that we thought the first number, the $3.6 billion, was a real number. The half billion is a real number. The trouble was they're not apples to apples. It's very much an apples to oranges thing. So he was taking the, you know, sort of the this gap that, you know, was presented to him in balancing the first budget and comparing that to real hard dollars that were saved at the end of that budget. And when you go through and make the apples to apples comparison, it's pretty close. But, you know, we felt like, you know, and consistently when people have used these apples to oranges sorts of things, we've taken a kind of a dim view on that because it's very easy to and manipulate things. So we rated that one half true, but it is one that I think we are going to hear more of in the months ahead, especially because that's a big talking point for the governor as he runs, you know, enters into this, you know, 2014, and the election really heats up, that he took a bad situation and, in his view, turned it around. Now, people disagree on how he did it, but those numbers, you know, there is an actual surplus at the end of his first budget, and mm-hmm. that's where we came down as half true.
And where can people submit suggestions for claims for you to check out?
Yeah, you can email us at the address is politifact@journalsentinel.com. We get, you know, a couple suggestions a day usually, and we try to keep up with them and pick the ones that are most interesting and freshest for our readers.
Thanks very much for being with us.
You're quite welcome.
Greg Borowski is the editor of PolitiFact Wisconsin. We'll check news, and then we will talk about Wisconsin and a new report on the Affordable Care Act.